Didn't touch him. Didn't touch him. Instead, they slunk away as though they were afraid of him. All that night while Daniel prayed, they paced to and fro, growling now and then, but never even trying to attack him. And early in the morning, Daniel heard a familiar voice. "Daniel, Daniel," cried Darius, "servant of the living God, is thy God, whom thou servest continually, able to deliver thee from the lions?" And Daniel said, "My God hath sent his angel and hath shut the lions' mouths so that they have not hurt me." And Darius was so glad that he commanded that Daniel should be taken up from the den. Now, some may say that the lions didn't touch Daniel because they weren't hungry. Oh, but they were. When those who had found fault with Daniel were put in his place, what a terrible scene. The lions pounced on them at once, breaking all of their bones in pieces before they reached the bottom of the den. And King Darius was so impressed by what had happened that he sent a special message to everyone in the kingdom. It said, quote, "I make a decree that in every dominion of my kingdom, men tremble and fear before the God of Daniel, for he is the living God." Now, these wonderful messages and stories have come down to us across hundreds and hundreds of years because the God who lived in Daniel's day is just the same today, steadfast forever, and he still delivers and rescues those who trust in him.
The Bible Story was furnished by the Home Health and Education Service of Decatur, Georgia, for promotional consideration.
Has been regarded as a martyr by most Americans ever since they first heard of the My Lai affair. One poll taken 15 months ago showed that people by more than a 2-to-1 margin regarded him as a scapegoat. Today he is ascending from the status of martyr to that of hero in the minds of many. One congressman today called Kelly a great American. As things are going, he will probably also be...
We got enough gas in that new car.
Yeah.
To cast down the road.
Yeah.
And to see is if all night filling the station still mean, you know, Ocala all the time. Well, we gonna leave by 4 o'clock in the morning, set the clock alarm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we'll leave 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, well, all the filling stations ought to be open by then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm gonna pack tonight.
Yeah, well, that's good.
And we coming back Monday.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Unless something happens, because you see, I go down there and view the, if we going to view the body, we coming back Monday.
Yeah.
Because ain't no need of we going and staying all that long.
No.
See, my brother, he want to see me and Jake on some particular business.
Yeah.
Planning on coming home to live tonight.
Uh-huh.
He done got scared, he going to die.
Well, that's one thing of scam, ain't it?
That's one thing of scam.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you're up there crying at night.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even drunk or put no crying.
Mm-hmm.
I'm too far for y'all, even if I get sick.
Ain't that old?
What am I going to do? This
mm-hmm.
and that? I'm
well,
coming home.
He's right about that.
Yeah, he was right about that.
Mm-hmm.
He said, I'm coming home to stay.
Yeah, well,
and
that's
I look what a hard time this boy has getting home
mm-hmm.
when his brother died on.
Yeah.
So he just going to fly down and view the body.
Mm-hmm.
So you see, you know, he got to go to work.
Well, how about the other boy? Is he coming?
He here.
Oh, he already
yeah,
come.
Yeah, he here. Cause see, that is brother, and he
uh-huh.
had to just get over and come right
come
over.
Come on, yeah, he
done
come.
Brother can't do nothing.
Yeah, cause he done come.
Yeah, he come yesterday. He
uh-huh.
come yesterday.
Yeah.
And
well.
My brother had to work today
yeah.
because the job just started back up, you know, cause he can't work, he can run up there.
Uh huh. Oh yeah.
And he had to just get over and come right then on the counter, you know, cause this other brother can't do nothing.
Well, he's leaving tonight. Huh?
Yeah, my brother leaving tonight.
Tonight, yeah.
And he'll get in Miami around about he said the plane he kept here getting there around about 12 o'clock.
12 o'clock, yeah, well, y'all will be down there by then.
Not tonight.
I mean, 12 o'clock tonight.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
oh.
what my brother did.
Oh, my
well,
Lord.
We'll get there right.
That's fly too fast for me.
It's 4 hours. It's 4 hours fly.
Mm-hmm.
4 hours.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
be the night. Well,
sometime in between 1 and 2 or something like that. All the time he'll leave, you see.
Yeah, that's
right.
He
ain't be on time. He said he'll get you around about 1 o'clock tonight.
And you leaving at 4.
I'm leaving 4 in the morning.
Well,
and he'll get there, I say, around about 11 or something.
Yeah, that's right, because it ain't too. Go on the back way, and it's quicker, you know.
What, on 75?
Yeah.
Man, I don't like 75.
75,
for
no, wait a minute, 441?
Huh?
Hit 441.
Well,
you
that's where you generally go, 441.
Yeah,
I don't like 75.
441 will take you right on straight down.
Yeah, 441, that's where we generally go.
Yeah, because
you know, I don't like 75.
Yeah.
You'd be way out in the woods.
Way out,
And if anything happened, you're just out there.
Yeah, when I moved on 4. We come up we caught Indian Town.
Yeah.
Out of West Palm Beach and come right on 441.
Yeah, 441.
Didn't
well,
have to get off.
441, you see, always. If anything happened, you always be near the
always
town.
Always somewhere, that's right. Well,
so I don't like that street, Nick. I don't like that road in the daytime.
No, 75, that's kind of bad.
Yeah, it's bad
out there. I wish I had a card to send, but just like I wrote my girlfriend the other day and told her that when I want to send cards, I can't find none, or ain't got none, or something
and
like
then
that.
Can't get to the store.
Then can't get to the store.
You can do for people, but you just can't get around.
Can't
and do
get
it
to the
yourself.
Store. Yeah, that's
that
the
what
thing.
We told myself. People don't think hard in Indiana. I think you do well as it is.
Well.
So I say we might bring your dad-in-law back with us.
Yeah. Well, that's good. That's
you know what
good.
I say y'all dad-in-law.
Yeah, y'all. I hear you. Well, he'll be very happy to see his pa.
Yeah, because I told him to don't write no more. You guys got a letter from him since
Yeah, I know you did. Yeah, the other Sunday. Last Sunday.
So I said he'll be here on the 6th.
No.
Well, I got another
one. Oh, you did? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he'll be here on the 6th of this month. After this come up, I just told him don't worry about getting no ticket.
Well, that's Tuesday.
That's what I know. Well, you see, that'll be Monday.
He can come on back then.
Yeah, so he's just going to come back with us then.
Yeah.
As I come, I told my brother when he called, brother, tell him that don't buy no ticket or nothing.
Yeah.
Just wait until we come
Wait
down
till you
there.
Get there. Yeah, that's right. Well,
be back Monday unless something happens. Because I ain't going to let him talk me and look you stay out.
Stay until Wednesday,
No, because, honey, I don't like vacation so much now. It doing something, especially in these big cities.
Yeah, that's right.
There's too much of going in.
Yeah.
And going on in. Run my blood pressure up or something.
Yeah,
I
know.
I can't go like I'm used
to. Yeah, well, when you
and
get...
And these young players excite me so much now.
Well, when you get down there, take it easy.
Yeah, I'm going to do that.
Well,
I won't see your son then.
No.
So I think you tell Buddy to tell Doris that I'm sorry. You tell Buddy what happened.
All right.
And I got to go, and then the mother brother called me. I got to meet him then. We got to leave out, and there's something that's happened up all at once.
Yeah, well, he'll probably be here in the morning because he always get my check for me, you know.
Well, you tell
bring
him.
Bring it. All right, I will. All right,
I'm sorry that, they scratch my name off and think put somebody else's name on it.
Yeah, all right. I'll tell him to
tell
him.
Okay,
then. All right, well, take it easy, him.
Okay, same
All right, way. See you when you get back.
Okay,
all right.
I'll call you when I come in.
Okay, bye-bye.
He seems to be out in the country.
Is this Dr. Mann?
This is Guy.
Guy, this is Pat Glisson. I got a note from Faye yesterday to call her.
Uh-huh.
And this is the first chance I've had.
Yeah.
She was inquiring about Mrs. Glisson.
Yeah.
And I called when I got the note, and Mrs. Glisson is doing just fine. She had to go in and have some x-rays done because she was having a little bit of trouble, but they turned out just to be one of those, you know how we get when we get older. And she's feeling fine, and she really appreciated you all inquiring about her.
Oh, she just had a little upset or something?
Well, what she has is diverticulitis. And she had a flare-up of it, a real bad one, a real painful one, I should say.
Oh, I see.
And, of course, she was scared.
Is that the kidneys?
No, it was in the intestine. You know how you have a little pocket?
Yes. Oh, yes.
And she had, that's what happened to her. So she told me yesterday that she was feeling, well, you know how you feel after you've had x-rays and everything, but other than that, she was feeling quite well.
Well, that's just marvelous.
And, do tell Faye and you too that she really appreciated you calling her or calling, you know, inquiring about her.
You know, it's amazing. I I've seen her once, twice, a little bit, and she has all her mental faculties. I mean, she has vigor.
She's marvelous, let me tell you.
She has that vigor, and I don't know how. When I get a toy or something, it takes the starch out of me.
Yeah. Well, it comes out of anyone, but I like her because she's so fresh and such an individual.
Yeah.
She's not, you know, she's not a little old lady.
Oh, she's not, is she?
No, sir.
No, she has that vigor, and she puts me to shame. And,
let's don't say that.
She, no, really. Of a sort. Now, one thing she can do, she can talk me down.
Yeah, well, now that is going some guy.
Yeah. I mean, she can talk more than I can listen.
Well, and she has a lot to say.
Yeah.
It's not just a patter-patter like, you know.
Yeah.
I really enjoy her. And, you know, she really does love, you know, people inquiring about her and everything. She's over there by herself, and it really made her feel good to think, you know, that you all were thinking about her.
Well, what do you all talk about, Pat?
You mean Mrs. Glisson and
I? Uh-huh. What's some of her good subjects?
Guy, the main thing that I'm interested in when I talk to her is Cross Creek as it was.
Yes.
And, of course, she knows that she's an authority on that.
Yes.
And then, of course, I have to get a lot of advice on my orange trees and what have you, but when I like to hear her reminisce, and also her Georgia reminiscing is just fabulous.
I've never heard anything about Georgia.
Well, every once in a while she'll get cranked up and talk about her girlhood.
Yeah.
And, of course, that was not too long after the freedom of the slaves, and she remembers a lot of the Civil War men and what they talked about, her own grandfather and so forth. And that, of course, that to the kids is just out of this world. They love that.
Oh, really? She even goes back to that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think she was born in 1890 or something like that. She doesn't really have a clear recollection because the records that they kept back then weren't too accurate.
Yeah.
So that is if you're interested in Georgia, you know, or just a young girl's childhood, you know, it's really interesting.
Uh-huh.
And then she had some photographs over there that were interesting to me, horses and buggies and, you know.
Oh, she did?
Kind of, they weren't called what are they called?
Surreys.
You know, they, she wore long dresses. And
yeah.
Just, I don't know, we got her going through a trunk one day and. It was really interesting.
Uh-huh.
I'd like to do some paintings from them, really.
Uh-huh.
I think they'd be, you know, kind of a Grant Wood style type of thing.
Uh-huh. Well, now she talks about the old colored people.
Yeah. They had a lot of colored people when she was a child, you know, living right on their place.
Mm-hmm.
And they were more like relatives, really, than help.
Yeah.
I was surprised, but they were, her father was a wealthy landowner, not the plantation type, but a wealthy farmer.
Yes.
And they had a huge place up there, and they had a lot of help, and she talks about the wedding gatherings and all that type of thing.
Yeah.
She's really fascinating.
What is the, you see, now that's part of it I had never found out. She talked a little bit about riding horses out in the, and he said if she got lost, let the horse bring her back. I remember that.
Yeah.
But she never talked much about her, her establishment up there.
No, she never does. And she went to another thing that surprised me about her. She went to a girls' finishing school up there.
Yeah.
And wasn't comparable to what a finishing school would be in this day and age, but it would have qualified her to teach and everything, but she didn't do that.
Yeah.
She was more interested in business.
Oh, really?
Well, she helped her father, you know,
uh-huh,
run the place.
I pressed her one time when she came down here. I said, what did you use for money? And all. And she sidestepped it. she said, oh, they had a little bit.
Yeah, well, she'll always sidestep. But you know how people were, Guy. Money and things like that were more or less a sordid type of thing to talk about. She didn't. And she does that with me. I haven't any idea, except that I know that from the house that they had and from the land that they had and everything, you know, and from the education she had,
yeah,
that they weren't poor.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. I'm glad to hear that. Now, let me see. Now, on the Cross Creek thing, who does she talk about?
Probably, I don't know, mainly the Rollins characters, but then they mention other characters, too, that Marjorie Rollins doesn't mention. Jake talks about, well, there's a man that never talks. I don't know if she ever told you about him.
Uh-uh.
And somebody made him mad when he was a kid. I think he's still around, but he's not over there. He obviously had to have had a mental quirk because his dad gave him a whip, and he never spoke after that except to a few people.
Yeah.
And his wife wasn't included in that.
Oh.
And that's something, his name is Man Bailey.
Man Bailey.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And he's still around, but he's not still at the creek, probably.
I don't think he's at the creek anymore.
Yeah. Now, you know, these people that she has worked with all her life, the Crosby fella who used to take care of a grove.
Uh-huh.
I'd love to hear talk about them.
I know nothing of the Crosbys, except that he took care of a girl.
You see, she knows him like a book.
Yeah, they're
and,
very good friends.
And I don't care about anything personal about it, see, but just a lot of those things that he got into.
Yeah.
Do you know him?
No, I don't. I don't know him at all.
Does she talk about any of the Townsends much?
Some, but I don't really remember too much about the Townsends. Mainly, a lot of my information on them came from the Rollins book.
Oh, I see. And nothing up to date?
No.
Do you know them?
No, I don't.
Well, I tried at one time to get acquainted with some of them, and they were very easy to talk to. But it seemed like I was clear out of their orbit.
I was going to say, did they shut you out? I've had that feeling that they were very nice, very polite, everything, but I wasn't one of them. You know, they didn't talk to me.
Yeah,
like
well.
That. Except for Bernie Bass and his wife, because they're friends of ours.
I never saw Bernie.
No, and he's dead now, and you missed something.
Yeah. Well, you see, I can't even find time or an occasion just to talk to some of them. I don't need to know much, but I'd love to know two or three of them. Now these Bocknecks, whatever they call them up there.
Bocknecks.
Is she talk about them?
No, only just like I talk about Richardson's or Woods or anybody.
Yeah. Well, let me see.
Did you ever meet George Fairbanks?
No.
Well, now, he's a character. I don't know much about him. You could ask her about him.
She knows him?
Yeah, oh, yeah. Everybody over there knows George.
Uh-huh.
He's mentally retarded.
Yeah. Well.
He's quite a character.
Yeah. I think the best talk, actually, was about Tom, her husband.
Oh, yeah. Well, I think that he was the man in Cross Creek. From what other people told me. And
yeah.
Not bragging, but...
Oh, no, no.
Because I
well,
didn't even...
Now, you see, that's not in Cross Creek, Ms. Rollins' book. I mean, you can't even tell that he's in the background.
You can in Cross Creek. He figures all the way through it. You know, the dog fight and that he had with Ms. Rollins and so forth.
Well, but nothing like Ms. Listen said.
No, and you know that, like my sister-in-law and different people told me just what a giant of a man he was, you know.
Uh-huh.
I can tell from the things that they say about him.
Yeah. Yes. Well, now, you see, they came down just about the same time as Rawlings did.
Yeah.
Just a little ahead of them.
Uh-huh.
About the same age. So she could, you know what, if you could do it, if you had to, you could just, you don't have to, if you could just talk enough where you could then go set it down and, you know, some of the things she said.
Yeah, because she talks colorfully, you know, she doesn't use old, her talk is hers.
Uh-huh. Yes, it's good steady talk. If you could, especially some of, I remember she said about the pound party one time that she sort of doubted that they had hoaxed Ms. Rawlings, that what happened was they had invited other people and the other people didn't come. And so that puts a slightly different, that makes her a little closer to the countryside than Ms. Rawlings.
Well, I think Ms. Rawlings used a lot of poetic license there, you know, in her book.
You think so?
Oh, I'm sure of it.
I didn't think so.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. My father-in-law in Cross Creek, I mean, she mentioned, said something about she didn't know whether Tom Griffin could read or write, or she, and she didn't care. Well, he was extremely versatile at writing and figures and, you know, reading and so forth. It wasn't...
Oh, that's right. She does make that comment, doesn't she?
And,
ah.
Well, knowing the family, now I don't know about the other people at the creek, but knowing the family, I know she took a lot of license with our in-laws. Of course, they didn't care.
Yeah.
They said that people that knew them knew better, and people that didn't know them, they didn't care.
Didn't matter much, did it? Yeah. Well, now, you mean, who'd you have in mind?
You mean, I'm talking about my mother-in-law. She said that anything Marge Rawlings said, she didn't care.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
How is everything up at your house? I never go up that way anymore.
I don't know. Our paths don't cross.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear you.
I say our paths don't cross.
No, they don't. I'll tell you why. My husband's gone, and I'm full-time housewife, mother, and father, and I have to carry these kids into school every day, and that shoots down about everything else I ever do.
Oh, yes. That just tyrannizes.
Yeah. Faye'll be interested. Nikki's going to St. Joseph's College.
Oh, really?
Uh-huh.
I'll tell her.
He'll probably want to talk to her before he, you know, well, he won't go till September, but he always considers her one of his very best friends, even if he doesn't see her.
Yeah.
And she might be interested. David Thorpe got married. The violinist, she knows him.
Oh.
Much news.
She's out there with a cattle. I'll tell her that she can't call you, though, can she?
Yes, we have a private line now.
Yes. So she just has to tell, just come over, go over there and see you. Yes.
Well, I'll tell you, it was so kind of her to come and then to leave the note, and I wanted to make the return call. Last night I've got a little boy that's got pneumonia here.
Uh-oh.
And another one looks like he's coming down with the flu, and I got all wrapped up in that last night and I didn't call.
Oh, gee. Pat, thank you for calling. Now tell her what you said.
Okay, guy. Thank you.
Told that Jesus knew what he would do. Don't you see? This means that right from the start, when the people began to get hungry and the disciples started to worry about how much the food would cost, Jesus had everything planned. He knew about Ben. He knew about Ben's lunch. And he knew what he would do if Ben would give it to him. He watched Ben all day. He had seen how interested he was. He knew Ben wanted to do something for him, and so he planned the whole marvelous miracle with this little boy in mind. Feeding all those people must have been a great strain on Jesus and his disciples. In fact, the disciples were so weary after carrying all that food to 5,000 people that Jesus told them to
get into the boat and sail to the other side of the lake for a rest. Meanwhile, he tried to send the people home. It was difficult, for some of them wanted to make him king then and there. A man who could provide free meals like this was the very person they were looking for to be king of Israel. But Jesus did not want to be that sort of king. He told them to leave him alone, and at last, after much coaxing, they went away. And then he climbed the mountain again and prayed. Later that night, a storm came up. And remembering his disciples out on the lake, Jesus decided to go to them. So he went down to the shore and kept right on walking across the water. How he did it, nobody knows, but walk on the lake he did, for all his disciples saw him. And were they frightened? "It's a ghost," they cried, as the white form of the Master appeared, gliding gently over the crested waves. "It is I," Jesus called to them. "Be not afraid." They couldn't believe their eyes or their ears. How could Jesus be out there on the water with no boat under him? Always ready with a bright idea, Peter called out, "Lord, if it's really you, tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," said Jesus. Probably Peter didn't expect such an answer. But now he clambered over the side of the boat, and he started to go to his beloved master. Now that took a lot of courage on such a dark night, on such a rough lake, but Peter was well rewarded. This was wonderful. He was actually walking on water just as Jesus had. He hadn't thought it was possible. Why hadn't he tried this before? But his joy and his courage didn't last very long. Taking his eyes off Jesus, he began to look around at the waves. What if one of them should knock him over? What if he couldn't keep his footing? He began to doubt. And that very moment, he began to sink. "Lord, save me," he cried. And in a flash, Jesus was by his side, holding him up. "Oh, you of little faith," Jesus said, "why did you doubt?" As the two stepped over the side of the boat, the sea suddenly became calm, and so did the disciples. Remembering the miracle of yesterday, and now this, they fell on their knees before him, crying, "Thou art the Son of God." Bartimaeus was sitting by the roadside near the city of Jericho, begging for money. How many years he had sat in this place, day after day, he couldn't even remember. It was a long, long time. Travelers between Jericho and Jerusalem had come to expect to see him there. When still quite a long way off, they could hear his plaintive plea, "Help the blind, please, help the blind." He didn't know the meaning of the word sight, for he had been blind from birth. Never once had he seen a flower or a tree or a house or a mother's face. People had told him about these things, and he tried to imagine what sunshine would be like, but it was very difficult. He lived in a world of darkness, and there appeared no way out. His senses of touch and hearing were very keen, and he could find his way about very well, but he could never see anything, not anything. Oh, how he longed to be able to see. It had been his dearest wish since childhood. As a little boy, he had hoped that when he grew up, he might be able to see like other people. But now that he was old, he knew that there was no hope, none. Well, that's not
exactly true. Some time ago, hope had come to his heart again. It was when a passerby had told him about a wonderful teacher who had appeared in Galilee, who was healing people of the worst diseases. He had even healed lepers. He'd made the dumb to speak, the deaf to hear. He had even opened the eyes of the blind. But don't get excited about it, the stranger had told him. He's way up in Galilee, and most likely he will never come to Jericho. Oh, thought poor Bartimaeus, if only he would come this way, just once. And he thought about this many times. Now and then he would ask people whether they knew anything about the great teacher, but nobody expected him to come to Jericho. And of course, even if he did, he probably wouldn't see anybody. There were always hundreds of people around, all wanting something. But, thought Bartimaeus, if he ever comes, I'll be on the roadside waiting for him. Then one day it happened. It had been a warm, sunny, sultry afternoon, like so many other afternoons in this part of the Jordan Valley. Very few people were traveling, and very little money had been placed in his outstretched hands. It seemed as though everybody must be staying in the city for some reason or other. He didn't know why. Now and then he could hear shouting in the distance, but he couldn't guess what it was all about. But then the sound grew louder, and he recognized it as a great crowd moving, and it was coming nearer. Along the Jericho Road, he guessed there must be hundreds of people in the noisy throng. He wondered why. What is it? He asked a passerby. What's the matter? Jesus of Nazareth is passing by, said the stranger. Not Jesus of Nazareth, said Bartimaeus. And then to himself, so he has come at last. Oh, I must not miss him now. As the sound of the shuffling feet and the voices grew louder and louder, he guessed the great teacher must be getting very near, and soon he would be gone. It must be now or never. Suddenly, he shouted at the top of his voice, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. All of the longing of a man's soul was in that cry. All that he had hoped for through his poor, sad, dark life. Nothing happened. More and more people went by. He cried out again, Jesus, Jesus, thou son of David, have mercy on me. He must have been desperate. He must let Jesus know that he was here. But there was so much noise and so many people. Jesus, he cried again. Be quiet, snapped somebody. Don't shout so. But Bartimaeus took no notice. This was his one great chance. It might never come again. He cried the more. He cried out a great deal. And then it seemed to him as if the crowd stopped moving. And a moment later, and very close by, he heard a voice so filled with kindness and love saying, bring him to me. Next he heard another voice. Come on, Bartimaeus, take heart. The master is calling you. What do you want me to do? Asked Jesus. For Jesus had heard above the noise of the crowd the poor blind man's cries. Lord, said Bartimaeus, that I might receive my sight. Go, said Jesus. Your faith has made you whole. And so it has. His eyes were opened. And for the first time, he could see. And the first thing he saw was the face of Jesus smiling upon him tenderly. No wonder, the Bible says, that he followed Jesus in the way. I'm sure he did. Follow Jesus all the way to the life's journey. So eager was Jesus to help the poor and needy that sometimes he sought them out in their strange hiding places. One Sabbath afternoon, when he was on a brief visit to Jerusalem, he went to the Pool of Bethesda to see the scores of sick folks who'd gathered there under its five arches. They were a sad sight. Some were lame, some were blind, some were paralyzed. Each one believed that if only he could get into the pool at the right time, he would be healed. Day in and day out, week in and week out, each one kept hoping that he would be the next one healed. As Jesus looked upon all these poor sufferers, his heart of love was deeply touched. He spoke to one of them and learned that he had been a cripple for 38 years. 38 years. All this long, long time he had been hoping that he might be healed. How very, very sad. "Do you want to be healed?" asked Jesus. Did he? But he had lost hope. There was nobody to help him into the pool. It took him so long to wriggle over to the edge that someone else always got there first. But Jesus knew how to bring hope to the hopeless. And tenderly but firmly, he said to the poor cripple, "Rise, take up your bed and walk." Walk? The poor man scarcely knew what the word meant. He hadn't walked for so many, many years. He was so weak and so stiff. But no, he wasn't. Not anymore. Something had happened inside. He struggled to get up. There was no pain. He found he could bend his knees. He could stand. He was a little shaky, to be sure, but getting steadier all the time. It was wonderful. And then he stooped to pick up his bed or his pallet, as Jesus had told him to. And it didn't hurt to bend. He was healed. He was well. He could walk. He could run and jump after 38 years. Wonder of wonders. It was too good to be true. So excited was he at finding himself well that he never noticed who had healed him. When he turned around to thank him, Jesus had gone. And so he walked out through one of the five arches right into trouble. A group of people outside asked him what he meant by carrying his bed on the Sabbath. The Sabbath? He had quite forgotten that it was the Sabbath. "The man who healed me said, 'Take up your bed and walk,'" he said innocently. "Who told you that?" they asked. "The man who healed me." "And who was he?" they insisted. "I don't know." And he didn't. But a little while later, when he went to the temple to thank God for being healed, he met Jesus and he recognized him as the one who had healed him. "That's the man," he told those who had asked him why he was carrying his bed on the Sabbath. But they had already guessed that it was Jesus. Foolishly, they were all upset because Jesus had broken the Sabbath, they thought. Instead of rejoicing that one of God's suffering children had found health and happiness on his sacred day, they had started to criticize. They must learn that the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. Did you ever stop to think that though Jesus was always mixing with sick people, he never got sick himself? Tired, yes, but never sick. We never read of his having had the mumps or the measles or the chicken pox or anything like that. He was the fountain of life, pouring forth health and strength and happiness to others. "I am come that they might have life," he said. And that's why people flocked to him by the hundreds and the thousands. They all wanted to know his secret. One day, a leper, seeing Jesus in the distance, forgot all the rules about staying away from people and came running toward him. "Go away, go away," I can hear the bystanders crying as they move back, scared to death. "Get out of here, you are a leper, you are unclean." But Jesus did not move, Instead, he stood there, looking down in tender pity upon the poor, sick man. "If you will, you can make me clean," cried the leper. What do you suppose Jesus did? He touched the leper. He touched the leper, saying, "I will be clean." Now, he could have merely spoken to him, but he did more. He touched the leper. The people around must have been shocked. They wouldn't have touched a leper for all the wealth in the Roman Empire. One touch might have made them lepers too, but Jesus was unafraid. Life poured from him into the poor leper, making him whole. Sometime later, when Jesus was passing through Samaria, he came across 10 lepers who stood afar off, afraid to come to him. No doubt they had heard that Jesus had healed other lepers, so they cried out at the top of their voices, "Jesus, Master, have mercy on us." And Jesus heard their cry, and he turned toward them, and his heart of love was saddened at the pitiful sight. "Go, show yourselves unto the priests," he called to them. Now, this was a strange thing for him to say, wasn't it? But they understood. No leper could ever come back into society unless the priest said he was cured. And they took Jesus at his word. No doubt they kept looking at each other to see whether any change was taking place. And then it happened. Suddenly all of the white spots disappeared. "I'm healed," cried one. "So am I," cried another. "And I." And finally all began running to the nearest place where a priest might be found. Jesus watched them go, and then to his great surprise and joy, he saw one of them turn around and come running back to him, falling at Jesus' feet. This man, a Samaritan, cried, "Thank you, dear Master, thank you." Turning to the people standing by, he said, "Were not 10 cleansed? But where are the 9? Why didn't they come back and say thank you too?" Shows, doesn't it, that Jesus notices little things like this. Not only did Jesus heal the sick and cleanse the lepers and restore cripples, open the eyes of the blind, make the deaf to hear, and feed the hungry and save the drowning and raise the dead, but he somehow got right inside people's minds and hearts. Coming out of Jericho one day with a great company of people, his keen eyes caught sight of a very short man running ahead of him. It was Zacchaeus. And Zacchaeus ran till he got to a sycamore tree. Now, Zacchaeus was the chief tax collector of the town. He was very rich. But forgetting this importance, he climbed the tree like a boy so that he could see Jesus pass by. At the sycamore tree, Jesus stopped, and he looked up into the face of Zacchaeus. And Jesus said, "Zacchaeus, hurry up and come down. I want to stay in your house today." "My house?" asked Zacchaeus. "Well, do come. You are so welcome." The people in the crowd couldn't understand it. They began to complain that Jesus had left them to go off with a tax collector of all people. But Jesus knew what he was doing. It was a fine house they went to, one of the best on the outskirts of Jericho. No doubt it had a beautiful view over the Jordan Valley. Now, we do not know all that Jesus said to Zacchaeus as they sat together in the living room or maybe on the porch that day. All we know is that before the afternoon was over, Zacchaeus the tax collector was a changed man. He said, "Jesus, I've made up my mind. I am going to give half of all that I own to the poor. And if I have ever taken any money from anybody, I'm going to give it back." Well, Jesus was delighted. "This day, salvation has come to your house," he said. And then Jesus uttered those words that have brought so much blessing to so many millions of people. For the Son of Man is come to seek and to save that which is lost. Yes, the rich and the poor, the high and the low, the sick and the well, the old and the young, tax collector and those who are taxed, anybody who is lost who wants to find the way home to God in heaven may know that Jesus is seeking him and will save him if he wants to be saved. That means wherever you are, and I mean up in a tree, or if you're out playing in a boat, or if you're out on a city street, or in your own bedroom, Jesus is looking for you.
The Bible Story was furnished by the Home Health and Education Service of Decatur, Georgia, for promotional consideration.
On the nationwide level is legislated under the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, the Department of Labor, the Department of Defense, Office of Economic Opportunity, and the National Science Foundation. With these top-level departments, one will find a dozen lower-level agencies. Now, with all of this decentralization of authority, it's a wonder our education system is as functional as it has been. But perhaps this is also the reason why there are troubles in the education system. Troubles with financing, troubles with curriculum development, troubles with tenure, troubles with retraining of teachers, and a dozen and other situations. Naturally, the Florida Education Association, having had great influence in guiding educational policies and procedures in Florida, must rely strictly on its own decisions and how they...
Hello?
Hey, how you doing?
Just fine.
Hey, did you let him beat my time?
Oh, my. You got your garden covered up?
Nope. We don't have a garden planted.
You haven't got one planted?
Mm-mm.
I haven't either.
Well, I don't have anything to lose but a flower.
Yes.
What'd you let it get cold for?
I don't know. Let me call Faye. She had something she wanted especially to say to you.
You didn't answer my question. Okay, you call her, but answer my question. Hello. Yeah, how you doing?
Fine.
You know what?
Yeah?
I asked him if he let that man beat my time. He didn't answer me.
Well, I'll have to jerk him up about that.
I'm telling you, it's telling silent gives consent. Don't it? Telling that means yes.
I sure will.
How'd y'all like him?
I sure will. I'll jerk him up about that.
He's a talker, isn't he?
Yes, he is.
You know what I'm talking about, don't you?
Yeah.
Eric Smith?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He told me about going over there.
He's a talker, all right.
Uh-huh. I told the guy that runs the store down there when he told me.
Yeah.
I said, uh-oh, me and Willis lost out now.
Oh, I hardly think so.
Oh, don't let that old Everett Smith beat the time.
What y'all up to?
Oh, Willis at work.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I'm sitting here just thinking about y'all, wondering if your mother'd gone home.
Well, she's going this weekend. They're coming for her.
Well, tell her I said bye and she enjoyed being with her.
Well, I'll do it, and she certainly enjoyed you and Willie. That was, she had...
Too bad Willie had to be feeling bad, you know, because...
Does he feel better now?
Oh, yeah, he's lots better now. He just had that cold, you know, and couldn't get over that cough.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's doing fine, but after the night, he may not be doing fine to get so cold.
Oh, he has
to. It's so cold outside, does it?
Well, we just came in. It's you know, if you're out running around, it doesn't seem cold, but it's chilly, all right.
He said you had something to tell me.
Oh, he was talking about this garden.
You got a garden? Oh, yeah, I know. Are you covering it up?
You think we ought to?
It's going to be frost. It'll kill it dead.
Oh.
Sure will. Kill it dead.
Well, I guess I better get out and...
The man says frost, and if it's frost, it'll kill it. My brother had, about, I don't know how many acres over here planted, and he had said the best thing he ever had. And he lost that. He replanted again. That's the trees tonight. He'll lose it again.
Of all things. Oh, well, this boy's just got a few little tomato plants out there. We might find something to cover them with.
It'll kill everything that's out there.
Oh, it will. Peppers and everything. Well, it's his garden.
If it don't, it'll be a miracle. I told him I didn't have anything but my rose bush. And I guess it hurt it. It hadn't killed it yet.
Well, I don't ever remember when it's been this cold. In April.
Well, I have.
Oh, you can?
Yeah, my brothers was picking squash in April and come freeze and killed them right down to the ground.
Oh, man.
Mm-hmm.
Will this hurt, it will hurt squash and everything else.
It sure will. It'll get everything. Get everything out there. Get you if you have to get out there in it. How's Mr. Miles doing?
He's, just as ornery as ever.
You know what?
What?
You tell him that one morning he called me, he was eating breakfast.
Yeah.
And I was talking to him. I said, you want to talk to Willie? He said, no, I'm talking to you. I don't want to talk to Willie.
I don't know what we're going to do with these.
Tell him he put me off the hook mighty quick. Tell him Willie's not here. Don't have to worry. Y'all come see us.
Well, we will, and you come back to see us, and thank you for calling.
Yeah, tell your mother I said bye.
I will do that.
Okay,
mm-hmm. Bye.
Well, I've got to tell you, did you know Ash was a whole lot worse today?
No, I haven't been up there today.
Yeah, she was. She's been lots worse. She's had several of them things, whatever you call them.
What is that?
Them blackouts.
She has.
She had one right in Mine Corps face up there this afternoon. And I told some of them, I said, well, that's ended my stand with her by myself, because I can't do it.
Well, Aunt Claire, what did you do with her?
Frank had been talking to Dr. Strange. Dr. Strange had called and wanted to know about her.
Uh-huh.
And he told Dr. Strange that she just hadn't been getting along well good today, that she had something kind of like a chill this morning. And of course,
it's your fingers, you know.
Yeah.
And dummy, I mean, he was a young man, and he really drank a lot of whiskey.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know whether he picked it up on account of his condition or what.
Yeah, could
yeah. Have. Well, I ain't never got out yet. I ain't put no clothes on.
No.
No, I'm staying in the room.
Well, I've been running and running and sitting in the road and going to the store and...
Mm-hmm. How the couch look?
I done run so and ain't got nothing done I wanted to do and now I'm wore out.
Yeah, I know. What the couch look like?
Oh, it's green.
Uh-huh. That's pretty.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
It opens out for a bed. Both
mm-hmm.
of them do.
Mm-hmm.
Both of the couches open out for beds.
I got a box from a friend of mine.
Yeah.
From Molly from home. She sent me some stationery.
Oh, yeah.
I wrote a letter the other day, and I had one sheet of paper, and then I had a big white envelope here that I cut open and used that.
Yeah.
And I told her to excuse the stationery, but it was all out.
Yeah.
So she sent me a whole box of it, tablets and envelope. That was nice.
Yeah, sure was. Well.
Yeah.
Buddy say he forgot about it, or he didn't say nothing.
Who?
Buddy.
I ain't seen him. I saw him when he come home. He didn't come down this way.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay.
I'll see you. Y'all have a good Easter, Henry.
Yeah, you do, too.
Well, I don't think I'll have much. I guess I get on the couch. I ain't getting too hot.
No. Mm-hmm. Well, I'll call you later.
All right.
Tomorrow sometime.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Uh-huh. How are you?
Pretty good. I'm tired of being out in the yard working.
Oh, it's a wonderful day.
Isn't it pretty?
I was so sleepy I went back to bed. Are you going to have company?
I don't know whether any of them's coming or not. I haven't heard yet. Tommy's got the mumps, and I don't know if he's well enough of them to come or not.
Well, have you heard from Iris this morning?
Well, I haven't called up there because the bill floor's up there, so I
did they come?
Uh-huh.
Oh, uh-huh. Well, I'm so glad.
So, but Coco called, and she said Frank said that he thought she was feeling fair up until they started back on them antibiotics that that doctor down yonder gave her, you know?
Uh-huh.
And she started getting sick.
Well, she can't take those things. You know that.
And he ought to give her some other kind.
Oh.
I guess maybe Dr. Strange decided he'd better have them back.
That's right. Well, I hope she'll be better. I'm been so worried about her.
Well, she's not any better, I don't think. Mm.
They're going to have to do something with her about to, so she can, when she gets sick, they can give her the right thing to stop it, you know.
Well, she was a little bit hungry last night, Frank brought a little big piece of steak.
Uh-huh.
And he said he thought she kind of enjoyed it, but you see, she hadn't had none of them things.
Yes, that's right. Well, I do hope she'll be better. I really
But he
do.
Said Flora, he felt better because Flora was cooking dinner.
Oh.
He hadn't had nothing to eat hardly either.
Uh-huh. Well, I know it. He's had a bad
What
time.
He could run in there and try to fix, you know, and watch her and everything else. Because she just sit up there and pass out right in your face, you know.
Yes. Oh, and it happened to you the other day, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. But I'm glad it didn't happen on Sunday while he was gone.
Oh, I should say.
Because he and Cole both was with me the other day.
Uh-huh. Well, I'm glad. That somebody was with me.
No, I won't stay with her no more by myself.
No, I wouldn't because she's very weak, too.
Mm, she's weak, and them kind of things, we take quite a little doings to bring her to. But
oh, yes.
My Lord, Gloria said sometimes they stay out a couple of days. That's
oh,
a great
yes.
Scott.
I know that, and I know they're in the hospital sometimes, and you know when they don't even know they're coming out of it. Sometimes it's bad. That
you know, I don't believe they want them kind of patients in the hospital much, do you?
Well, I don't know. They are.
Dr. Strange said you had to have 1 foot in the grave and one out to get in anymore.
Well, it looks like it's a bad situation now, but I think if anybody needs it, she does.
I think she does, too.
And I guess he'll see how she's going to do over the weekend.
Yeah, he'll call them today.
Oh.
I bet she has to go back down there tomorrow, and I don't know whether Flora will have to leave tomorrow or whether she had a week off or what. They
mm-hmm.
didn't know either.
Mm-hmm. Well, I hope Flora will stay a little while with her if she can.
Yeah,
know.
Well, she teaches, so I don't know whether she had any time
That's
off or not. Then little old Volkswagen, of course, said he must have rode on top of it.
Oh, no, they in a Volkswagen?
Yeah. I know, I've been scared to death coming over them mountains with him in that Volkswagen.
Well, he's a big man.
He's a big man, but he's a good driver, of course, you know, but that don't make any difference. It just scared me.
Well, Miss, I hope you have a happy Easter.
Well, I hope you do, too. What you going to do, Ellie?
Huh?
What
we're
are you doing?
We're not going to do anything but deliver papers and go to church.
Is that all? Well, I'm going to church. That's
Miss,
all I do.
Miss Smith, when I got back this morning, though, I was nauseated.
Oh, you were?
And I just had to go to bed. I couldn't even do anything. Generally, I can come in, cook breakfast, you know, and then lie down for a while, but I had to go right to bed.
What time you get in?
We got in a little before 7 this morning.
Mm-hmm.
And we went about 4.
You feel all right now?
Yes, my head is better now. And but I rested about 2 hours. And
Well, does Rob rest, or does he keep a cool?
Yeah, oh, he went to bed, but he ate his breakfast. Generally, I'll cook some bacon or eggs or something. Rob doesn't care about eggs, but I'm not a cereal eater. I don't eat much
cereal. Doggone, I don't like cereal either. I tell you, I do like a little piece of bacon in my egg.
I want an egg and toast. I can have 3 or 4 pieces of buttered toast and scrambled.
Yeah.
I want something to eat, but I couldn't eat them.
But you don't like bacon? I
yes,
like just
uh-huh.
a slice of bacon with my egg.
Oh, yes, I want that bacon, yes. And you know, Miss Smith, there's just certain kinds I like. Some of it is so smoked or something.
Some of it, yeah, and some of it cooks to nothing.
Yeah, some of it just goes to where you don't have anything.
That's right.
So I just, but I like it. I like the flavor with, you know, to put my eggs in there.
Sally, don't you think Jane looks bad?
Well, Jane is too thin, I think.
I think Jane looks awful.
Well, she.
You know what Fred told me yesterday? That Dr. Coker up there, that dentist,
uh-huh.
wants $160 to pull 4 of her teeth, her bottom teeth. $160. $160 and won't touch him till he gets the papers or whatever it is from St. Luke's Hospital concerning that operation on the neck. So Fred said, now I don't know whether the x-ray, they want to find out whether it burned anything or, or what.
Yeah. Well, she hadn't told me anything, Mike.
Well, don't tell them I told you.
No, I won't.
You see, Fred tells everything he knows.
Yes, uh-huh. And, well, you know that they pulled Kathy's wisdom teeth, and I think they wanted $50 a
pound. Oh, yeah. Well, it's quite expensive, you know, when them teeth are crooked and crazy in there.
Yes.
But I just imagine it's a kind of a...
Yes,
you know,
he's
just got a funny feeling probably there.
Yeah, she's had a bad time.
Yeah, I know it.
And I think she is a little thin.
I think she's awfully thin.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, yesterday, that's the first time I've talked to her, you know, face to face, and I don't know when. You know, when I see Jane, she's coming out in the beauty parlor, I'm going in and stuff. I never get to see Jane unless I run in the store sometime, and if Rob's with me, since we've been on this paper route, he goes in. And I don't ever get to see Jane.
Well, that's too bad to live that close and not see.
Uh-huh, that is a shame, you know.
Sure is. Who's that?
That's Robin. They've been, she and Linda been over here, and I was boiling some eggs. They got the eggs over there for the Easter egg hunt. They're going.
Yeah, well, good.
Got the eggs over there, but I had some here, and I had let them use the crayons to color them. They got the Easter egg dyes over there, and they fixed them over there. But I was just letting them do something.
Yeah.
And she was calling to somebody over there. Bill, I guess.
Well, they love to mess with that.
Yes, and just fooling around. And one of the eggs, I took them right out the icebox. I learned that you can't take them right out.
I read where it said that you ought to always have your eggs room temperature to cook with, too.
I dumped them in. Yes.
Did you know that? It said that in making your candy or making your stuff, you ought to have your eggs room temperature.
Well, that's what it said. Uh-huh. And I got... But now with these, I just dumped them in the water, and when they begin to get hot, they crack.
Yeah, they will.
They were, two of them cracked, so yeah. It was bad. Well, Miss Smith, I hope you have a nice, happy Easter.
Okay, and you too,
and you take care of yourself.
And I'll see you at church tomorrow.
Well, I'll see you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.